fossil fuels while we continue ourselves to expand and get rich from them. We have to, you know, there is, we have no moral, you know, authority to do that. The UK, the US, developed countries have to go first, and they have to provide the means of implementation for indigenous communities and for developing countries to transition away and to really take the climate action that the whole world needs.
And finally, we have 20 seconds. If you want to comment on one of the heads of DESA having an arrest warrant out for him for the murder of Berta Cáceres.
That is huge news. Daniel Atala Midens is from one of the most powerful oligarchs in Honduras, politically and economically powerful. His father and his uncles were the majority shareholders in DESA.
And Nina, so that is a tease for our post-show interview. We're going to post online at democracynow.org, along with our interview with Sonia Guajajada and Nina Lacani of The Guardian. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're in the middle of our end-of-year campaign. Help us meet our $75,000 goal by making a contribution today. KBOO's different hues of independent programming is only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give. You can also donate by texting KBOO to 44321 or by mailing a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, 97214. Our members continue to shine a light on community radio every time they give.
Hey, good morning and welcome to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, and 104.3 throughout the Willamette Valley. Via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.fm. Today is Monday, the 18th of December. I am Cecil Prescott, and I'm here with...
with me, Celeste Carey. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Celeste. How are you on this Monday morning?
Well, for some reason, it wasn't as dark, although I'm pretty sure that was an illusion. I probably just woke up a few minutes later. But, you know, it's Monday, and there it is.
There it is indeed. Well, it is good that you know, in a few days, you know, officially we begin doing the, I don't know what type of dance, because, you know, I officially say, well, it's getting lighter. It's springtime.
Yes.
So
yes.
At least in my mind, I said, okay, it's getting lighter. So winter solstice is coming.
Well, you know, that's part of my coping mechanism, too. I figure, you know, once the days start getting longer, that's why summer ends on October 31st for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know it's all mental tricks, but what can you say?
Hey, I agree with you. Whatever it takes. So yeah, I'm looking forward to, like, spring and light and, you know, a week from now.
Right. So before we launch in the show, you had a bit of sobering news to share?
Yeah, I do. And it came to me yesterday from Lisa Loving. And she wrote an observation, so I'm actually, I'll just read a post from Jeff Rosenberg. He wrote, "Our beloved friend, sister, spiritual and musical guide, community leader, and comic love bug, Robin Shanti, departed this realm for further adventures this afternoon." He wrote this on Friday. "Following a long illness through which he struggled bravely and diligently, and from which she now flies free. She went completely on her own terms and by her own choice, without fear or regret, surrounded by loved ones who chanted along with her to her favorite spiritual music, followed by her final DJ selection, When I Go by Dave Carter and Tracy Grammer. Donation in her honor may be made to the charity of your choice. Robin herself favored the Jeremy Wilson Foundation. A celebration of her life will be held this coming February or March. Details will be announced as the time draws near. Thanks to all her friends, loved ones, fans, and admirers, and all who cherish her or touch her life, she died knowing just how loved she truly was." Robin Shanti, who was a very influential person in our community and in radio and KABU. And the Dharma Wheel was something she embodied, not only in her radio program, but in her life. Robin was actually one of the person I met when I first moved here, and I found out that we both moved to Portland within a couple of months of each other, so we were connected.
Wow.
Somehow. Thank you, Robin, for your life and for all that you are doing and have done. Rest well, my friend.
Indeed. And, you know, long may the Dharma Wheel spin here at KABU.
Indeed. So, let's take a breath. Inhale and exhale.
Okay.
And so, Celeste, shifting gears a little bit about the program this morning, and I'm going to let you introduce our discussion this morning. I'll just preface this by saying as I came in, I saw a headline from Willamette Week, and it was just general talking about two of the candidates who will be running for mayor. And it said something like law and order candidates. And I said, oh, yeah. There's a lot in our city and in our state about law and order and policing. And I'll turn it over to you, Celeste.
Well, you know, I wasn't sure how to frame it, because as we talked about last night, this was one of those topics that could not necessarily go where we wanted it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of cheated a little bit, and I came up with more than one thing.
Okay.
So I thought, okay.
All right.
Well, you know, because here, it's, we only have a few minutes to get it set up.
Yes.
And sometimes we have people who will call in before we even get a topic set up and take it someplace different. You know, and it's not that there's anything wrong sometimes with talking about other elements. You know, when we want it to stay strictly on point, we say so, you know. But I was a little concerned about our ability to keep this one where I want it to go because of the candidates that were running that affect it, you know. So we do have a candidate who is currently a member of council and has the responsibility for public safety efforts. But overall, what I wanted to do was just get comment about a poll that had been taken and if people had seen it. So let me pull that information up really quickly and get that topic on its way, and then kind of bring up the other topic, and that I knew you had said you had a topic that you wanted to share as well. So basically, some of you may have seen a news article that was on KGW that was regarding a poll that says that a lot of Portlanders are quite satisfied and don't want community oversight for police, and that they feel that maybe there's too much going on. And I saw that, and I'm trying to pull up the exact information. My computer is not working with me here today. But basically, there was a survey that asked if there was a need for more or less community oversight with regard to the police. And surprisingly, this poll said that, no, we don't need that much oversight. And I was surprised at the results, but then I got to thinking about what we had talked about this past week and even before then about how we have to be careful about how legacy media presents information to us. And what do we do to try to get a better story? And then it wasn't just that. It was the formation of the poll that was a concern.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, it looks like that whole section has just disappeared.
I have it. Well, I have it up if you.
Okay,
need
good.
To talk
yes, you
it.
Can. Yeah.
Well, let's put it in some perspective. In 2020, Portland overwhelmingly approved by 82% reforming police oversight. They backed that by 82%. Since that, even before that, the police association came out against it, and this poll suggests that Portlanders have showered on the forthcoming police oversight board, and nevertheless, the city appointed Police Accountability Commission to craft the final proposal that will be put before the Police City Council, and we will see what will happen. But as you suggested, Celeste, that this new polling that came out last week, suggested that Portlanders are no longer as receptive in that concerns about crime and issues around that have overwhelm so many that perhaps they are having a different response to whether or not there needs to be reform or so. And as you suggested, how that poll was crafted, and also as you suggest, in terms of the role of legacy media, plays a role in all of this. So, yes.
So one question is really simple, and that is, what do our listeners here on More Talk Radio, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, regardless of what the poll has said, regardless of what the latest election, I guess I shouldn't call it election, but when the measure was passed, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think we need to have a system that holds people accountable, and I guess more importantly, what are your thoughts on what is the biggest hold up for us moving forward with this? It seems to be pretty much a challenge nationwide for us to get any kind of serious oversight in this country of police activity. You hear about various municipalities that seem to be doing a good job, a better job, a job, but it's something that many of the police unions fight against. But there's got to be a bridge, an ideology, a method, a process, something where we can sit down and bring a mutually shared vision of accountability. When you think of many professions, there are various peer review efforts to keep the work based on integrity and transparency and honesty, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just really, I'm a little frustrated because I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I find it interesting that it wasn't a best worded poll either, from what many people who read it said. It just seems as though there is not enough effort at finding the bridges to these barriers of getting good oversight with authority and with leverage.
And you
okay,
know,
did I say that right, Susan? Because I thought we were trying to get it in.
I think so. So let's hear your thoughts about police oversight and the direction or that we are heading or not heading. And I'll confess, there's a continuing frustration on my part because we've heard this over and over in terms
over
of
and over again.
Oversight and coming up mm-hmm. with commissions and responsibility. And every time I see this powerful force of police officers preventing any meaningful change. But those are my thoughts. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. Your thoughts on police oversight and how we are responding to the need. Let's go to our first caller, Cody. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning, and thank you, Cody.
Good morning, Celeste. I'll try to make this as succinct as possible to probably get more people to call in and maybe to spark something a little deeper that's going on with a lot of these municipalities. And that is, how does the homeowners feel about all of this? And how is it affecting property value insofar as the area is concerned, considering what's been happening in the area in the last, I want to say, 5 to 7 years? And how does that affect, let's say, Portland's credit rating? And did we lose some type of AAA credit? And has it been knocked down as a result of maybe some issues that's been going on in Portland in the last 5 to 7 years? And whether or not, because it, once the homeowners hear this, I'm pretty sure a lot of them might be boiling a little bit because of certain things that's happening in and or around their property. And how maybe more than a few of them are a little frustrated as to what to do about it. And, yeah, I'll leave it there to let everybody run with it, because there are a lot of players involved with a lot of this, and no one's really trying to, like, see the subtleties behind what's really going on, know who's really grumbling, and the powers that be that are, like, manipulating themselves around City Hall insofar as property is concerned.
Could you say a little bit more? You teasing us, and you said no one.
Yes.
So,
well, I don't want to get too controversial, because this is cable. I'm talking about maybe a slight homeless problem. Mm-hmm. There are several sites that I may go to, and there are people who are talking about, like, the crime as a result in a lot of areas in and around, not just the homeowners, but the business owners also.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And the fact that you have businesses using theft, which is true, but it's not true necessarily in the way it's been showed us, that, you know, business and commercial theft is affecting just having a business in your neighborhood, you know, many owners are afraid.
Well, no one showed me the bottom line. I mean, everyone has their own point of view, but are they looking at the numbers, and are they looking at how the theft and everything else as opposed? Portland wasn't like this 10, 15 years ago. What happened? Okay. So my question is, okay, at some point, someone's going to say, here are the numbers before, here are the numbers after. It's costing us, and there are people who just probably are so in a hissy fit, could I say that over there, they don't care. They just want the problem fixed immediately, and they're not quite probably thinking about the consequences. Is that reasonable?
Okay. Well, that's...
I think it's not only reasonable, I think that is a good summation of one of the predominant views that you hear, you know. And you know, I it's a multifaceted issue. It's not an easily solved issue. So, and it requires a lot of hands to make this work. But I like the way you framed it as we look at it, because what you did, as you pointed out, number one, people are afraid for their investments that they have made here in this metropolitan area. Then there's also concerns of disinvestment, if I'm hearing you correctly, and wondering to what end are either one of these dynamics going to play out? You know, how are they going? Is disinvestment going to be supported, or is homeowner and business investment going to be supported? Which is going to be the dominant dynamic?
Well, it's these type of dynamics that I've noticed in history that always kind of show themselves during some type of economic changing of the guard. Let's go with that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But no one, well, people who are in the history will see it. And it's always to where the bureaucrats and the technocrats are in a really bad situation. They're in a corner, and maybe no one wants to go get in, no one wants not go to jail, but get in trouble as a result of dereliction of duty for long periods of time during when times are good. Not thinking, well, let's put to the side because, you know, economic situations, they operate in waves. Okay. And nothing's in a straight line. So let's prepare for the hard times. A lot of these technocrats, bureaucrats don't think that far, and let's not even get into the politics. Let's not even get into that, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah, I'll leave that there so that maybe more people could call up and put their two cents in so far as what's really going on, not just here in Portland, but nationwide.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. It's good to hear from you guys again.
It's good to hear from you too, Cody. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
And you are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, 104.3 in Willamette River Valley, and everywhere in the world, KBOO.FM, here on More Talk Radio. Thank you for waiting, John. You're up next.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for your great show. This dovetails right into the federal officers not being able to be responsible for snatching those people right off the street. There is an article on NBC about how the guy that got smacked by the federal officers during the protests, during the Black Lives Matter protests, can't get any relief, because the officers themselves can't be responsible. The Supreme Court shut it all down. I'm not the one to do the legal analysis, but this dovetails right into that. The police are just can't be responsible now, any federal officers, and we know that the Portland police don't want to be responsible either for the crimes that they commit on individuals. So please, someone call in and get that analysis that I can't do.
Well, before you leave, I want you to say a little bit about, I hear this frustration on your part about the inability to hold Portland police officers responsible or accountable. What do you think needs to be done to push the powers that be and move in the right direction?
Well, there needs to be citizen oversight. I mean, the right. Police can't.
Okay, and that's what we're talking
about.
They
never have been able to.
Mm-hmm.
The police have never been able to police themselves because, oh, duh.
So,
go ahead,
Celeste.
Go ahead, Cecil. Go ahead.
So that's a problem we go over and over in terms of civilian oversight. And for me, at least, there have been, I don't know, numerous proposals, it seems, for Portland police about civilian oversight. And is the police union and those forces that maybe that previous caller talked about so powerful that any effective civilian oversight is impossible?
Well, it seems like with the history that's gone down in Portland, yeah, it seems impossible because the water's getting thrown on it all the time by the powers. You said it. I have to go.
Okay.
Someone call in and get the analysis on this dovetail thing. Thank you.
Thank you so much, John. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. We are speaking live this morning on the 18th of December. We're talking about police accountability and, how they're not being held accountable and the problem.
Well, what we can do, to shore up the work that's already been done, too. I mean, it's not like we just had 2 years of people working on the Police Accountability Commission.
Yeah, and say something about that.
Well, I was just going to say their work was put before City Council. There is an expectation that some key elements will be pulled out and that some of the authority to actually hold officers accountable will be watered down or removed because it will have to do with performance and work issues and that the union will prevail in watering it down. And I am giving the barest mm-hmm. Cliff Notes version of this mm-hmm. because we wouldn't have enough time for people to come in, call with their observations or their opinion. But go ahead. You go
no,
ahead.
I was going to ask, November 2020 isn't that long ago. There was that big push in terms of police accountability, and we all remember, the spring mm-hmm. and summer of 2020. So 82% of Portland voters approve a measure in terms of police oversight. And since that time, people have been working on crafting this thing that we voted on. And where are we now? Where's the city council now? And what is the pushback that we're hearing? How come this hasn't rolled out yet?
And therein lies the rub. I mean, too many issues, I think, are being conflated. Mm-hmm. For example, people are concerned that it is a lawless stance that groups like the Police Accountability Commission, also known as the PAC, have, and that any time any protest takes place that especially is not favorable, does not like the police, then there is an assumption being made that that is all approved of by members of these various commissions and studies. In other words, somebody has conflated a protest that may be anti-police as being supported by PAC members. If you say we want police accountability, rather than think about what people are saying with those very specific points of we want to make sure they treat people respectfully, that constitutional law is observed, which means, when you're a countering officer, certain things like you getting your rights read to you or whether or not you can send a search. People are not separating the request for those things to be prominent in encounters with police. They're conflating that with you don't want any police at all. Mm-hmm. And that's what bothers me. It doesn't seem that enough time is... No, I can't say not enough time. It just seems that there are people who foment this polarization more so than try to build. Well, I was at mm-hmm. a court hearing where a business owner was visibly and understandably shaken because her business had been vandalized because she wanted to hold some kind of community encounters with police officers in a business. But she, I think, in her distress, unfairly criticized the police accountability group as being responsible for that. And I think we are given all kinds of confusion from both the media and electeds as to who exactly is in charge of what, so that there's never a clear discussion of why people want accountability, how they want it, but also hearing a cogent message, a clear message from those people who do want police, a stronger police presence to protect their property. Let me
ask you, because you're making sense by showing how complex we've made it. And yes. I just want to add from this KGW article, which also explains where we are. It reads in part, Portland currently has three different bodies tasked with different aspects of overall police oversight, two of which are made up primarily of civilian, but more importantly, the civilian committees don't have any say in disciplinary decisions, something the new oversight board will be empowered to do. Eventually, the new board is intended to replace the existing three. So, oh my gosh, three three things.
Different bodies that have their power emanating out of three different dynamics, like, for example, federal court, a local initiative, and maybe a state initiative. And so there is one mode of confusion right there. It's like, well, who's doing what?
Yes.
You know, who's doing what, and what does this mean? And then you, it doesn't help that you have polarization. You know, when John called, even though this show has nothing to do with what he's talking about, he just pinpointed and illustrated in a way the confusion over who's minding the store, mm-hmm. who has the keys, you know? And then you have these polls, which this latest poll, which was conducted between December 2nd and 7th by DHM Research, it uses some really simplistic and what I would say confusing ways mm-hmm. of describing the dynamic of one police oversight. You know, like, for example, the voter mood. And all things considered, do you think Portland is headed in the right direction, or is it on the wrong track? And what kind of question is that? Mm-hmm. I mean, not only is it a really simplistic question in terms of a very complex issue, or at least we've made it complicated, but it doesn't really speak to what it is Portland is doing. For example, by having Measure 110, some people may say, well, it's coddling people, but really what it does is it offers those people who are less inclined to be involved in drugs and addiction, who are less inclined to have criminal activities, you know, than, okay.
I need to take a deep breath. Yeah, take a deep breath.
People who don't necessarily have a criminal intent, but substance abuse issues.
So your explanation of the issue is a demonstration of how complex we've made it by the conflation of issues. So you just in this, you know, last 3 minutes, you talked about Measure 110 and and three different oversight committee over policing, which are separate issues, but somehow we conflate them all. And you know, just like the question, one of the questions you asked, are you satisfied with the direction of police? And so conflate about
crime. it didn't even say policing.
That's direction. Yes. So whatever you want to read, take into it. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. If you want to speak about any of the three potential oversight committees who are crafted.
We're limited to one, so we have enough time.
Speak on one of the three. Let's hear what you have to say. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and let's go to Ross. Thank you, Ross, for waiting.
Thank you, Ross, for holding.
Well, good morning, and thank you for delving into this difficult topic. I want to maybe add a different perspective, which is I'm trying to understand the general climate of opinion and how it has changed, and what are some of the factors that might be affecting that. And I think there's a weariness in the city with things that don't feel comfortable, and we on the left hesitate to criticize people who have been part of the movement and agitation confronting the police and so forth. I've been there, done that. There's a weariness. I know I was at it was a Bible study meeting, and this is a year or two ago. And the demonstrators were going by, shouting about the police. But you know, these are nice people. But you know what their response was? Simply, they're rolling their eyes.
Now the other thing I've been noticing, and it still appears. Guess what? You still see people riding up ACAB. Now I don't think on the air I can say that ACAB. Now you know what that means. It's yes. All over the city. Now what that means is that there's a fringe out there that are demonizing the police, and the demonization of the police is part and parcel demonstrations. The demonstrations don't control the demonization of police, but meanwhile people sit back and they watch the demonstrations and so forth, and they remember the last time they called the police. Hey, guess mm-hmm. what? Mm-hmm. I bet 90% of the time people need to call the police. The police come. Maybe they don't come right away, but they are generally serving the people, and people are happy with getting that they can call the police. And now, on the other hand, so the police are, of course, they want police to be accountable, of course, but they get tired of recognizing that the other people are maybe not so rational. Maybe they're not being fair to the police. What do? They throw rocks at police. Well, to go to the police station in northeast Portland at Killingsworth and MLK. You know, there's that beautiful building that's owned by the city, the former Fred Meyer. It's built to have a beautiful canopy all the way around. Guess what? The police took that canopy down because it might get burned down if it wasn't taken down. So now that the city is filled with slogans, ACAB, and it ripped down the canopy, well, okay. You get my point. Demonization of the police is part of the problem of police. We need better police, and you're not going to recruit any better police with a whole bunch of demonization going on.
So
thank you, Ron.
Okay.
Well, you know, and that's part of the problem is that it's difficult to have a nuanced conversation. You know, having worked in public safety for the city of Portland, you know, I've encountered what you hear about every profession. There are good and bad people. Mm-hmm. I think at its heart, what people want is for officers and their associations to support those officers who are making positive community contributions and establishing strong, positive community relations, but also to either terminate or help officers who have problems recognizing the responsibilities of the authority they have. And being able to discharge their duties with professionalism and respect of the people in the community. It's not a matter of every single police officer is bad or every single police officer is good. There's a matter of there don't seem to be professional standards that seem to have the public's welfare in mind. And that's one of the biggest challenges. Go ahead.
And I think addressing the question like you suggested is a way to move forward. I think for me at least a question in terms that we should wrestle with is the whole idea of policing itself, and whether or not we have entered into partnership with a system which by its very nature is oppressive. And so whether or not real reform can be done without examining the system itself. And I'll just pause that, and let's hear uh-huh. what someone else has to say. Let's hear what Santiago has to say on policing. Good morning.
Good morning. I think there's four things that are in the way of, well, not even really in the way. There's just four things that make policing untenable in its current state. Number one is that people get it wrong. People take a reformation of the police from the point that they should be community servants, when in reality they were formed as the violent arm of the capitalist wing that they pay for to put down. I mean, the first official police were put together to put down striking workers in the 1840s, but the predecessor to that was slave patrols, as everybody knows. So their formation inherently is anti-worker, anti-working class. Number two, we have to contend with two Supreme Court rulings. Number one, DeShaney versus Winnebago, which states that police officers do not have to act in favor of the public unless the violence is coming from a state actor, which predominantly pertains to children, but could pertain to anyone really if they really wanted to dig deeper. The second one is qualified immunity, which keeps individual officers from being held accountable by federal law. Yes. And then number four is the police unions, which effectively hold it all together and are essentially like the lobbyists to the states. So we have all four of these things that concretely point to the fact that police are not here to serve us. They're here to serve the bourgeoisie. So if we want to see safer streets, it's something we have to take into our hands. The Brown Berets and the Black Panthers showed us that community patrols, where we keep the police out unless it's absolutely necessary, is the only true way to go. Because on top of that, police officers don't even generally live in the communities that they work in, making them occupiers. So they don't even, I mean, most of them don't even really care. They don't have any personal connection to the people that they're supposed to serve.
Let me ask you, Santiago, you propose a different way of community safety and you reference.
Not a different way.
Let me finish. You offer a different way, a different concept of society in terms of community safety than what has been the norm for the last, 150, 200 years. How do we move our society in such a way that people are able to embrace? Remember, before you call, Ross mentioned how oftentimes people are afraid when, a rock is thrown into their house. The first thing you want to do is call the police. You want safety. How do you balance those two concerns and offer a way forward?
Well, if you want to be completely honest, you don't, because the police are not there to serve us. If somebody throws a rock through a white person's window, they may offer some protection to white people, but if a black person calls the police and they're in an emergency, they're more likely to get killed than anybody else.
But the fact
Yeah,
I'm not disagreeing, but I'm asking you in terms of response, community response. So and I know that in certain communities, the level of violence is such that oftentimes we need to call out for safety. And the first thing we do is call 911. Now, the consequences of that might be disastrous. But what do you do? How do you protect that family who feels that they have no alternative, but also realizing that when you call 911, you're putting those you love at risk?
Well, the thing is that if, like I said, it's not something that's going to happen overnight. We have to change. What we have to do is we have to change the narrative on what policing is in this country. And then once we change the narrative, people understand that the police cannot be trusted. And while we're changing
we're talking circles here, though. Here's my challenge of what you're saying, Santiago. We're asking, what can the everyday person do when they need something for safety?
And then it's not that you're wrong in saying that we need to change the narrative. Yes, we do. But in the meantime, what would you do if you were one of these people who were assaulted or was harmed in some way, and you wanted to call the police? And what do you propose should happen? What do you should?
Well, here's the thing: call the police if you need to. Call the police if you need to, but what we need to be doing is we need to be working on community patrols. We need to be, loosening this liberal, this white liberal bias against guns when we know armed communities are safe communities. You know, the difference is that the cops are the ones that got the weapons. You know, when we had the weapons, when we could do our own community patrols, we were much safer. When people know the best way to call, obviously, we switch over to the street response, but Portland street response would be a great thing that we could do in the meantime to support, because obviously they're getting flack from cops because they're actually doing their job.
I totally agree with you on Portland street response as one of the possible answers as solutions. But I do want to give you some pushback on this whole thing about an armed group, because it did not bode well for Trayvon.
It didn't bode well. Well, you're talking about arms in the hands of the oppressor. In the hands of the oppressor are different than arms in the hands of the oppressed, as we've seen how
communities work with the Black Panther. Okay, I question that, not because I want to denigrate. I'm not speaking badly about the Panthers or any effort like that. But what I am seeing is that you want to trade one particular group for another without maybe thinking of how that everybody's got to have training. Okay, let me just try. I'm trying to,
absolutely.
Everybody needs training. Not everybody needs to be carrying a gun. How are you going to differentiate between who can be doing this and who should not be doing this? You know, because people are going to say, well, it's my right. And not everybody has that shared sense of community safety, what community safety looks like. So I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying, I hear what you're saying is we need to sit down and talk about it and figure out what does community safety look like. Yeah, I hear that.
What I'm saying is that there's going to be people who disagree. There's going to be people who disagree. But I argue that disagreement comes from the fact that we as Black and brown folks have acquiesced to white liberal concern culture. Like, nobody talks about, and everybody wants to talk about Black and brown folks with guns, but they don't talk about the white folks with guns. I mean, you might hear some concern trolling over it on major media news stations, but at the end of the day, they don't see oppressors walking around with automatic weapons in the same light that they see the oppressed walking around with automatic weapons, when we know for a fact that most of the violence that we see is intra-racial, not interracial. But at the same time, it's a more complex subject than that. But I would say we are arguably much safer with our own people carrying guns, protecting our community, than a bunch of occupiers who have no duty to protect us whatsoever. I mean,
let me ask you in terms of, I mean, I appreciate how you're unearthing and this conversation, because there's levels that are very deep and cannot be answered, in 15
Definitely.
Minutes. So let's put a pause on this conversation about community safety and arming of community, because that's a whole deeper conversation that we can go into. But I appreciate your calling, and we'll continue this, but I want to get our next caller before our time runs out. So thank you for calling, Santiago, and thank you for all that you've said. Have a good day. And before our time runs out, let's give an award for possibly the person who may have waited the longest to speak, if he's still there.
Oh, my. Congratulations. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Portland, Oregon, and both of you.
What's
my goodness.
What's on your mind today?
My mind is I'm not sure. I'll tell you a couple things here. I'll try to leave it on a positive note. All right, here we go. I've been handcuffed by a policeman so badly I couldn't play guitar for 6 months afterwards, right? I didn't like that at all. I think that was an unprofessional thing to do. On the other hand, I've also been met policemen that were not pieces of crap. I didn't want to get bleeded or beat.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what you called for.
Yeah, I just, ran.
Yeah, we got you. We got you.
So listen, I've met, in background, I lived in a tent in Portland, Oregon for a year. I've been in jail 4 times. I've got a degree in mathematics. But I've met really bad policemen that treated me like really like a bad human being.
Yeah, not good.
And
okay.
At the same time, I've also met other policemen that are really nice people. So I'm not sure. I'm going to leave you with that note. Can you just comment on that, closing out, please?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Arthur, for calling.
Thank you.
And
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Appreciate you. And Celeste, I think you were saying something similar earlier in terms of policing and the challenge.
But the challenge is, you know, trying to separate the complexity of the issue, both in terms of constitutional law, you know, basic respect for human beings, a depth and breadth of understanding which drives crime, you know, all of those things. And I don't want to make it sound like I am being really simplistic. Let me say it this way. When I was a nurse, there were certain standards that you had to have. You were expected to treat people a certain way. You're expected to uphold the well-being and total health of a person. And there were professional expectations that you would have, that you would stick to a process that was you had professional standards. You knew how to treat people. You did not lie, etc. You know, and so it's really frustrating for a lot of people that there don't seem to be this kind of concerns within the police, the policing effort, that there seems to be more energy put in excusing bad behavior than it is in supporting the officers that are doing a job that makes the community feel safe and respected. Mm-hmm. And I think when we go back and forth with this, that is one of the pillars that we need to have to hold up this platform of a shared community vision. It's like, if you're not meeting these standards, if you're not using your powers for good, then you need to be held accountable. And here are the standards of accountability. And, you know, that I think that kind of sums it up. Yes.
Okay.
Everybody's got a great point, but this is not going to be solved with one discussion. It's more like just keep thinking, talking, digging deeply into the narrative that you're fed, and make sure that you're paying attention to the nuances.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And talking about the nuances, here's something that's not so nuanced, is that, you know, KBOO is approaching the end of the year. Well, the whole world is approaching the end of the year. But as we approach the end of the year, we want to remind you that you have the opportunity to continue to support as we seek our $75,000 end of the year pitch. So this is depends on you. Become a member, renew your membership, increase your membership. Hey, because KBOO is you.
That's right. Your community connection. And I put a plea out. I would still like to see us hit 55 members, supporting members, by the end of this year. We can do it. If you've already become a member, if you're already a supporter of KBOO, tell somebody else. Share the information so that we can share the support of your community connection, KBOO Portland.
Celeste and I will see you in the new year.
That's right. In the new year, we'll be back in January after the first. And stay tuned to the OMO Variety Hour. And thanks so much to our stalwart engineer, Ray, for keeping us on point and on the air.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. You can always make a donation to help keep KBOO colorful, independent, and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give. But right now, during our end-of-the-year campaign, is the perfect time to contribute. Give now and help us to reach our goal of $75,000 by December 31st. Be a ray of light in your community by making your tax-deductible donation at kboo.fm/give today.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and touchstone events of your life.